Attention, attention. You are listening to a pre-recorded episode of The Curious Realm. Curious Realm is busy traveling the vast void of time and space to find the best paradigm-changing content the universe has to offer. Enjoy the following transmission, and remember, stay curious. Coming to you from the City of the Weird. Exploring topics from the esoteric and unexplored to dimensions unknown. Shining a light of truth on the darkest corners of our reality. Welcome to the Curious Realm. Hello, everybody, and welcome to this pre-recorded episode of The Curious Realm. I would like to thank our guests this week, Ella LeBain, as well as Mary Joyce, for being able to meet early, take care of this. I actually went through a spot of surgery Monday afternoon, so thank you, ladies, for being able to spend the time with me early. Been looking forward to having you both back on, back on the show, because we have had Ella LeBain on before. We met her at the MUFON conference. She is the author of the amazing book series, Who's Who in the Cosmic Zoo, A Guide to ETs, Aliens, Gods, and Angels. We will be talking with her about solar anomalies, as well as other sky anomalies, messages, things like that. Portents in the sky, so to speak. And then after the commercial break, we'll be joined by Mary Joyce, who we usually have on to talk about the world of she has a great book about deep underground military bases around the country, as well as that technology. And we've also had her on discussing Cherokee Little People, the many, many stories of the Cherokee Indians and the little people that live in the woods, actually near where Mary lives. So we talk with her and her website, Skyships Over Cashiers, about Mars anomalies, Antarctic anomalies, as well as anomalies on the moon. Are these remnants of past civilizations? Are they us in present day? That's even some of the question when it comes to ETs, that kind of stuff that we discuss regularly on the show. Is what we're seeing in the sky on all these videos actively extraterrestrial, or is it something that is much more homebound, that we are testing against ourselves and even putting out as means of disinformation to, well, allow for new technologies? So we'll be getting into so many topics this evening with the amazing Ella LeBain. While you are online checking out everything from Ella, make sure to stop on by our other guest and friend, as well as sponsor, Dr. Kimberly McGeorge, thesecrettoeverything.com. That is where you can go for alternative health, frequency healing, and consciousness expansion exercises. Stop on by thesecrettoeverything.com today. Let Dr. Kimberly McGeorge know what you need and let her know that Curious Realm sent you. While you're online checking that out, make sure to stop on by Curious Realm. That is, of course, where you can find all the episodes. That's where you can follow us on social media down here. Tons of links if you are listeners of podcasts and out there on various platforms, guaranteed. If you are using a platform, we're on it. You could also download our free Android app. All you got to do is click the image and bam, downloads to your device. So stop on by, check all that out. And of course, never ever forget the amazing Facebook. That is where you can come by, join the Curious Realm group, and join the conversation. That's where we pull our news from the week every week. this week out of news on Facebook, out of the New York Post, flesh-eating drug Trenk, meant for animals, now linked to thousands of heroin and fentanyl ODs. And of course, this was a huge announcement out of Gizmodo. James Earl Jones signs over the voice rights to Darth Vader. Now, this was a topic that we talked about back in our Dudes and Beer days regularly, and the idea of AI, the idea that Adobe actively released a software close to 7-8 years ago now, that you, as long as you have 20 minutes of somebody talking, you can actively type anything and it will say it in their voice. James Earl Jones has actively signed over the voice rights to Darth Vader. So now this AI company, which is part of the deal, can literally have James Earl Jones voice over Darth Vader into infinity and beyond, you know, because it's Disney, too. So, yeah, yeah. Groundbreaking things going on right there. Out of Fortune.com, the U.S. ordered 171 million updated COVID booster shots, but only 4.4 million went into the arms as Biden says, quote, the pandemic is over. And out of CNN.com, once nicknamed Murderopolis, the city that became the city of the, quote, defund the police movement is grappling with heightened violent crime. That is just some of the news that is fit to print, folks. Stop on by, join the conversation on the Curious Realm group there on Facebook. Of course, once again, while you're online, make sure to stop on by Who's Who in the CosmicZoo.com. That is the amazing series of books by our guest here in the first segment. Ella LaBaine, welcome back to the show. How are you doing?
Oh, hi, Christopher. Thanks for having me. It's wonderful to see you again.
Absolutely. Hear you. Yeah, same, same. I love following your adventures online. You were always on social media posting things. You, much like me, are apparently a science freak. You actively studied at, I'm trying to remember, the observatory.
The Hayden Planetarium, yes, in New York City.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you've got a little bit of science behind you. And the work that you have done on Who's Who in the Cosmic Zoo is absolutely amazing. I've had a chance to go through and read probably about the better half of the first book now, since we met. And our conversation the first time was amazing. And we both got into the conversation of anomalies and anomalies that have been happening not only on our planet, but all over the solar system.
Yes.
For the last little bit. I mean, there was just recently the new picture of Jupiter where it showed the plasma storms in perfect geometric shapes.
Really, and it was blue.
Yeah. Yeah. Really wild stuff.
We've never seen that before. Yeah, that was amazing.
When I decided to have an episode about anomalies and solar anomalies and sky anomalies and anomalies on Mars, you and Mary were the first two that popped into my head. So I'm so glad to have been able to get both of y'all on to talk about this topic. You were actively just at a conference this last weekend, giving a presentation on these things. So let's start off with some solar anomalies and how you first came to be aware of these.
Oh, well, I guess it started in the mid-90s when I met Zachariah Sitchin and got to interview him in a one-of-a-kind conference. It was called When Cosmic Cultures Meet. And it was in Washington, D.C. And he just pretty much opened my eyes to a lot of what was happening and also what has already happened in the past. And that's why we study history, because it repeats. And hopefully we learn its lessons. Sometimes we don't. But it fascinated me. So I just delved into his Earth Chronicles and, you know, tracking Planet X and Nibiru, which is what the Sumerians called it. It has many names, depends on the culture. You know, the Greeks called it Hercobolis. The Chinese called it the Red Dragon. Hebrews, even, they called it the Destroyer. So got my attention for sure.
Well, most yes. definitely. And to know that even now, there are numerous models to show that there is something that is helping influence things, at least on the outer part of our solar system.
Yes, indeed. It is our solar system is perturbed. Perturbed sounds like disturbed, and it is. The sun is perturbed because of the plasma exchanges that is happening with this system. I call it the Nemesis Nibiru system, because Nemesis is the black star. And yes, the ninth planet is real, and that was Planet X, the blue planet, which ties into the Hopi prophecy of mm-hmm. the blue Kachina, where they said, first, you're going to see the blue Kachina, and now we see this blue planet, which they've, you know, reordered the numbering of it. Now they call it the ninth planet because they demoted Pluto, but Pluto is still a planet. And, you know, Sitchin called Nibiru the 12th planet. So there was a lot of controversy over his work. So I have that in my fifth book, The Heavens. I devoted a whole chapter to him and what went on, and especially the relationship between him and Robert S. Harrington, who was the chief astronomer for NASA in the 1980s and 90s. And he, you know, NASA has been tracking Planet X, Nibiru, since the 50s. And in 1982, they sent up IRIS, which is the infrared space camera system that went to Pluto. And, you know, by the way, the NASA chief still considers Pluto a planet. So for the aerospace engineering people, Pluto is still a planet. So this whole controversy of demoting it and renumbering it and renaming it, I mean, there's a whole lot to be said about that, which has to do with what they've been doing with the calendars and the, you know, they've been changing time. And this has been going on for millennia, where they change the calendars a few times, and there's all these different calculations. And then, of course, the Church of Rome, they had their calendar, which is what we are all going on now, the Gregorian calendar, which doesn't make any astronomical sense or numerological sense, because, you know, we're going into the month of October, which is 8, you know, November is 9, December is 10. Yet they reordered it because they added the emperors. So the whole thing's a mess. And and it reminds me of that Chicago song. Does anybody really know what time it
is? Yeah.
but anyway, back to Nibiru. So NASA's been tracking it for decades. And so Robert S. Harrington had data on it that was from their technologies, and he and Sitchin actually sat down and had an interview together, and they compared notes. And Sitchin was getting his information from the past, from the tablets, and they corroborated together. And that was amazing for both of them. They had some slight differences about, you know, how it was going to come in, you know, like one said it was like Virgo, the other one said it was Libra, close enough, you know, in terms of the sectors. But one thing that then everything got weird, because I think they corroborated and confirmed each other's research, the powers that be, I don't know, didn't like that. And Robert S. Harrington, at the age of 50, comes down with some very rare form of esophageal cancer and dies. And that was it. And then they sort of got a little heavy on Sitchin and said, we don't want you telling anyone when Nibiru is going to pass the earth. And, you know, I sat through multiple lectures of his.
Oh, wow.
Some of them are online and, you know, people could watch them. And that is just the number one question that everybody in the audience always asks. So when is it coming? And he was always very tight-lipped about that. And I met him in, like I said, in 1995, and that was a year after his encounter and interview, and also after Harrington died. So he was a little shaken up, you know, and
yeah.
I mean, he went full, you know, he had full strength all the way until 2010, until he passed. He was doing lectures, and I have a whole chapter dedicated to him because, you know, if it wasn't for his work, we wouldn't be using the word Nibiru, because he pulled that out of the cuneiform tablets.
Yeah.
Amongst other things as well. And, you know, so I was inspired by him, and I guess that kind of got me started on it all.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, rightfully so, because when you meet somebody of that type of learned skill set, let's just say, and befriend them, there's something special that goes on. And you really do get exposed to a world of study that the average student of such things is not exposed to.
That's true. And it's too bad they don't teach a lot of this in universities. In fact, I was just talking to someone at the show, and they were telling me she was educated in Texas. And when she's 28 and when she was going to school, they were talking about, you know, Planet X and then Planet Nine. And she got very intrigued by it. And then all of a sudden, everything went dark. Like, they just stopped. They wouldn't say anything. And this is what has been going on, because, you know, for decades, it was in all the astronomy magazines, which I prove, you know.
Oh, Planet X was conversation from the time I was in junior high through college.
Right, right. It was just common conversation. Everybody was looking for it. And that's how they found Neptune and Uranus and Pluto. Was all because they were searching for Planet X, and they saw perturbations on these other, like Neptune was perturbed, so there's something that had to be beyond Neptune, and then they discovered Uranus, and same thing with Pluto, and then something's perturbing there, and so there has to be something else out there. So now they've come to the, you know, and this is out there, they're calling it Planet Nine, and it's out there, right, you know, on the edge of the solar system. And it's huge. But that is not Nibiru. Nibiru is red. So like the Hopi prophecy talks about the blue and red kachinas. And basically they say, well, when you see the blue kachina, know that the red kachina is going to follow. And so we know that Nibiru, the red, which is also called in the Zohar and the Torah, the messianic red star. So again, we get the color red, and the Chinese called it the red dragon because it has a tail. It has two tails, which look like wings. They're plasmic wings that are full of all kinds of junk and debris. And, you know, this is so that it basically the tail precedes it. So that's what we've been seeing it since 1994 when, if you remember, Jupiter was hit with those string of comets, the Shoemaker-Levy.
Yeah, Shoemaker-Levy.
Mm-hmm. And it, you know, created holes in Jupiter. And now, as you and I speak, we're speaking under this Jupiter transit, where Jupiter is the closest it's been to Earth in like 700 years. And if I see it every night, it's like super bright.
Oh, yeah. So
you've seen it? It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Even without, you know, telescopes or binoculars, you just can't miss it. So it's kind of taken the hit for Earth many times. But, you know, the prophecies say that Earth is supposed to get hit by wormwood. That's in the Book of Revelation. And, yeah, you know, wormwood means bitterness. So it seems like it's probably going to be an asteroid or a comet that comes out of this system. Just to put everybody at ease, the planet Nibiru is not going to crash into the Earth. It's going to pass the Earth. But, you know, the passing is still going to devastate the planet. And,
oh,
you know,
sure.
Yeah, it's just the Book of Isaiah talks about that the Lord is going to turn the Earth upside down, which is basically biblical vernacular for pole shift.
Which we are square in the middle of geologically right now. Even whenever we had you on last time, we were discussing the fact that
that's right.
The geologic north is floating about 3/4 of a mile a day.
Yes,
right,
that's exactly
now.
Exactly right. We are in the middle of it.
Unprecedented distances.
Yes. And that's what's causing a lot of the craziness and, you know, the auroras that we're seeing on the Colorado-Wyoming border. You know, the auroras are, that's why they call them northern lights, because yeah, they're usually up in the north. And because the magnetic poles have shifted about 48 degrees and still going, it's coming further south. So, yeah, you know, that's evidence that, you know, and the Earth has wobbled and, you know, it's got knocked off the axis. But, you know, what's even more disturbing is, sorry, that's my cat. She's Chinese and she's a big talker.
Yeah, nearly 30 to 40 miles a year.
Oh, my goodness. Wow, that's
moving.
Great that you pulled that up so quickly. You're terrific.
Thank
yes,
you.
That is exactly what's going on. But you know what else? You know, the magnetosphere has gotten, there's a crack in it.
Yep.
So the sun is just like, it's like birth pangs, birth contractions, where they just, these solar flares and coronal mass ejections that are coming, the sun is just belching them out one after another. And, you know, some of them are earth facing, and the ones that are earth facing, they hit us, and it caused, there you go. You got that, the crack in the magnetic field. Well done. And that's what's been happening. And so that's why the auroras are so bright and they're coming further south. And even though they're beautiful to look at and, you know, the photos are stunning, that's not good for the planet.
Yeah, no, absolutely not. The magnetosphere is quite literally what protects us from the bombardment of cosmic radiation.
Yes, and that's unfortunately what we're getting.
Well, and even the fact that I'll pull up, I'm trying to remember where I saw it, but Earth's magnetic field is actually actively slowing down.
Hmm. Probably because of this. It's just not functioning the way it's supposed to.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that it cracked, I mean, the worst fear of all the astronomers and scientists who study this is the dreaded X-class CME, because that's the one, and then there's different tiers of it, X1, X2, X3. That can basically put us all back in the dark ages, you know, knock out all the satellites, knock out our power. And, you know, at some point when Nibiru passes the Earth, that will probably happen. But we're still in the birth pang contraction phase, so to speak. So, you know, there's going to be two passes. One, as it passes the Earth, it's going around the sun. It's, you know, being drawn around the sun. And then when it goes around the sun, it gets energy from the sun. And then the sun is going to catapult it back out on its orbit back into space.
Yeah.
And it's going to pass the Earth the second. That's that second pass. That is when the final pole shift gets completed and it just flips. So, you know, at that point, this is probably why they're all, you know, wanting to go, I say, back to Mars, because the ancient records was that they were there, you know?
Yeah.
This must have happened, which caused Mars to become evacuated, and everybody left Mars and came to Earth. And now they know that something's going to happen to the Earth, so they want to go set up colonies on Mars. So I think that's kind of ironic.
Well, you know, which at the same time would utterly be affected in the same way.
Yes, it could, and there's no guarantee that Mars is not going to get perturbed and hit as well.
Absolutely.
I mean,
we are very close cosmic neighbors,
exactly.
Closer than anybody else. So, which is why we go there so frequently and so easily.
Yes.
Because if caught in the right path of orbit, it's all of a 90-day journey, to get there, to get supplies, whatever. And there have been some amazing discoveries on Mars as of late, you know, the discovery of actual lakes under the surface of Mars.
Yes.
Here recently was actively the discovery of organic matter.
Yes. And I believe there's life already there, mainly living underground.
Yeah. Yeah. And I tend to believe the same thing, whether it is life as we know it, intelligent life, I don't know, but whether or not there could be animals of some sort, things like that, absolutely.
Andy Basiago reported, because allegedly they time traveled there and he saw three types of life forms, and one was like a plesiosaurus type. He described it like a big lizard type creature, and then there's like the grays, and then there's human.
Yeah.
So apparently that's what's going on there. I haven't been there, so I can't speak from experience.
Yeah.
But that's just what I'm hearing.
Well, and there have been numerous air quote whistleblowers that have come out in the past many years. And
so
the veracity of their stories, I don't know, but their stories and claims are incredible.
They are. And they seem to corroborate. So, we'll see.
Yeah. And, even to think of the possibilities that we had, had we never actively stopped going to the moon, and even to think that, the Space Force is anything new. I mean, we've been tinkering around in space since the days of Sputnik, and we haven't stopped.
Yes, I agree. And so, they just keep renaming things.
Well, and let's start getting into some of these anomalies real quick, that have been caught because of our tinkering in space, because of things like, the ISS camera, because of things like, let's find it here.
So,
which one is it? Yes, I was just about to say the SOHO Solar Observer. This is one of the videos that you provided to us of something massive. And this thing was parked near the sun if I remember correctly, for like 2 weeks.
Yes, just kind of looks like it was refueling.
Yeah.
Like it's the sun is just a giant gas station, and it just, sucking up nuclear energy and
whatever helium, it is,
all the stuff, all the good stuff that's in. But that is like courting, if I've ever seen it. And then it just pops off. I mean, that's not doesn't look like a solar flare. It's looks like intelligence.
Yeah.
And that's what, when we see these spherical objects that are showing up regularly in the space in the SOHO, the Helioviewer, the coronagraph telescopes, they're showing these big, large spherical objects. So some of them are planets from the Nemesis Nibirusen. There's one that we know goes around the sun every 28 days, and it eclipses the sun every 28 days. This is not it. This is more of what you're seeing, I believe, is like a spacecraft, of or a mothership of some kind. I mean, it looks like intelligence. It does not look like a coronal mass ejection, because we've seen those swirl, and this is like some object. And you know, there's another.
Well, and you can clearly see in that one clip that just passed a coronal mass ejection happening, like as it takes off.
Yes.
As it leaves, so you can see the natural process going on right next to this.
Yes. So it's something else. I mean, there is another, belief or train of thought out there that they're solar cores, little baby suns that the sun is birthing, and that one just, you know, flew the nest. But I don't know. It looks pretty big, and it looks like intelligence to me. So I don't know, but it's definitely not a CME. And then, you know, we're seeing the objects, these planets that are moving, in a rate, like the one that we are seeing every 28 days is cyclical. So, you know, there are spherical shaped craft. I mean, every time we see something round around the sun, people immediately think, oh, it's a planet. It's an exomoon. It could even be a large mothership, a space.
Sure.
Starship or spacecraft, you know. So we don't know. But one thing we do know is that it's happening regularly. I mean, we are seeing it often. And then the spaceships, the ones that actually look like ships that, you know, like bird wings, like Phoenix, like the Starship Enterprise, the Millennium Falcon. Yeah, those. I mean, they're showing up on a regular basis.
And these things now, granted, once again, folks, pre-recorded episodes. So teaser, we get into these totally unrelated guests, but we get into these Phoenix shaped craft with Mary Joyce in the next segment. And
oh, interesting.
They're okay. These things are massive.
Yes.
Massive.
Gigantic. Huge.
On the order of, I believe one of them was almost the size of Jupiter.
It's just unfathomable in our minds. Like how do you even, I don't know. But I mean that there's a video that I sent you that really looks like a big winged bird, like that one. And that was just sitting above the earth for 2 months. And you see all these little scout ships coming and going in and out of it. So what you're showing was taken from the ISS, from one of the ESA astronauts, the European Space Agency. So, you know, just a little aside for your guests to know that the ISS is shared by 14 Earth space agencies. So NASA doesn't rule it. And even though NASA has their NDAs and they don't want their astronauts talking and releasing these videos back to us, the ESA is not NASA. So this Spanish astronaut could not, you know, he was like, whoa, I have to take out my cell phone and share this. And once it's on the internet,
wow,
genie's not going back in the bottle. So this has been, you know, shared multiple times on various YouTube channels and all, you know, on Facebook. I shared it on Facebook. But this one is very clear. My other one takes a while to get focused, but you can still see the ships coming and going in and out of this thing. And it was hovering.
That is incredible.
Isn't that amazing?
And it would be incredibly massive.
It has to
massive.
Be
massive, miles and, long.
And what a lot of people have said online, you know, is that it looks like the Klingon warship. And so now, it's like, this is where the truth is stranger than fiction
now,
comes.
Now,
from.
I will say this. I will say this. Just as a point of looking at the footage, perhaps maybe a failed umbilical, like they tried to do many years ago, you know, where they tried to, they were trying to gather energy from the ionosphere with like a large umbilical cable that was like 2-3 miles long, and then it ended up getting severed. And it's the video that you see all the time of all the little orbs coming up around this thing. And they're like, remember, this thing is like miles long, so these things would be hundreds of feet in diameter, and they look like little donuts coming up around it. So, and that's kind of what that looks like to me. But even still, the stuff coming up around it, things coming to and from it.
I have never seen anything quite like this.
Yeah,
that's just its intelligence.
That is remarkable.
It is. It looks like a big bird, and it's gigantic.
I am really glad that we took the time to get this footage.
Yes, yes. Thanks for your patience and figuring it out how to put this on. I mean, that was really good. But you see that on the bottom there, that disappears after a while. So that's something that gets sucked up into the what looks like the head. And then you see all these little scout ships coming and going. And it literally hung out there for 2 months. So what was it doing? Whose was it? I mean, it doesn't look like the sea. Like, I don't know. I don't think it's ours. I'd be damned if it is, you know, if it's a secret spaceman, because it's just huge.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, that is a massive object.
Yeah. So that was just paradigm shifting, jaw dropping when I first saw that. And I thought, wow, you know, and I've been showing it over the weekend at the conference here. And people are just gobsmacked. They cannot believe that. And then others are just like, well, yeah, I knew that. I knew that. They're here. It's not, you know, because New Agers, they're like, yeah, look, you see all those are little ships and they move. But a lot of people are like, oh, yeah, we've known they're here all along, you know. So it's really interesting and diverse, the different communities, the New Age community versus, you know, the Christian fringe or the science people.
Yeah.
And they're just unfortunately not all on the same page about stuff.
Well, and, you know, we had this conversation at MUFON on air, and it's interesting to see so many eyes all over the place turning from religions to science, turning to this topic and considering this topic finally, and no longer considering it a topic of something that's anathema, but a topic of curiosity and, well, what will we do?
You know? Yes, indeed. I mean, and science, I believe, is the mind of God. I mean, the further we get down and understand and learn different types of sciences, we're understanding the creator, because the evidence of the creator is in the creation. And understanding science is just his language and his mind, or his them.
Yeah.
You know, there's a group. But fascinating.
Now, you yourself, just to follow this little rabbit hole for a second, you yourself studied rabbinic studies, things like that, correct?
Yes, I was educated in Israel and with biblical Hebrew.
Yeah. Happy Rosh Hashanah, by the way.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yeah.
5,763.
5,783.
Is it 5783?
Ah, yes, tonight.
I thought I had started. I was 20 years off.
Oh, that's okay.
but the point is that when you put a date like 2022 on it, it really doesn't seem that old, you know? And when you put a date like 5783 on it, you really do open the door to a whole different world of understanding.
Yeah, I mean, it does change things a bit, especially if you round it up to 6,000.
Sure.
So, you know, and this is what was going on with the Church of Rome. I mean, you and I talked about this last time and how they manipulated the calendars and they changed time and they did. And that's the prophecy in the Old Testament about the Antichrist is that he changes the times and the seasons. And, you know, the Gregorian calendar doesn't make any astronomical sense whatsoever, whereas the Hebrew calendar does because it combines solar and lunar.
Yep.
So, you know, there's discrepancies, there's arguments on all, but at least they've been consistent. They've been counting. But then before that was before, you know, the flood. So they've been counting since, I guess, the book of Genesis when they started out again.
Yeah.
And then what happened before that, you know, the first flood. So
we didn't really know
what time it is.
That's just it. I mean, it's the fact of, at that point, you really do have a much larger worldview, and you have a much larger view of the cyclical nature of humanity.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to 2,000 years, where it's like, hey, you can argue round Earth all day long, people, but don't forget, according to our calendar of 2,000 years, right now, you know, now granted, that's not like the beginning of humanity, I know, but we're talking about like after BC, you know, after BCE, like when people became smart, right? Well, only in the last 500 years have we fully all committed to the fact that the Earth is round.
That's true.
Until then, you said otherwise, you'd be like driven out of town. You'd be burned at the stake. You'd be
crazy.
You'd be locked up for heresy, Jack. Lord forbid you go out and teach it. Then you'd be excommunicated.
And yet there's still people, still Luddards, Luddites lagging behind who still believe it. They don't even believe we've gone to the moon. They don't believe they can get out of the atmosphere.
Sure.
You know, so there's all this crazy stuff.
Well, and people are like, oh, what about the radiation? You know, when Magellan went over the horizon, a lot of people are like, well, what about the horizon? Hey, I guess we'll find out when we get there, Jack. Like, that's literally the attitude.
Yes.
And it takes that kind of attitude. You know, I say it on the show all the time. We need more Magellans. We need more people that are willing to bravely go into the world of the unknown and just explore and be willing to do so. That is that. And more I look at things like remote viewing is a prime example. I'd followed the science for years. And the work of the Monroe Institute, the work of SRI, things like that. Never had it dawned on me that all of the people that started that science folks, proven science, all of them PhD holders, every one of them like particle physicists, things like that.
Well, it's all about energy and understanding it and frequencies and resonances, which, brings me to the Schumann resonance.
Exactly.
Which is what's causing all kinds of what I call spiritual fatigue. Some people call them ascension symptoms. I don't know. I'm not calling that yet because I think it really has to do with the coronal mass ejections and it's causing the Earth's hum, which is usually at 7.83 hertz, to go way up.
Yeah.
I mean, some days are worse than others. I mean, I know you feel that, and as many others do, and they think it's them. It's not them. Everyone is going through this. And just having these symptoms because our DNA is changing and we have to, through adaptation, adapt to this new frequency that is going to become the new normal of the Earth. Because let's face it, what's going to end up happening when all this whole cycle comes to an end at the end of this age is heaven comes to Earth and the Earth becomes like a star. So that is where the New Agers talk about ascension. But also, it's biblical. It's in the book of Revelation, and that the sun actually is dying. So we are not going to be dependent on the sun anymore. We're going to be dependent on the king of the kingdom of heaven, the Son of God, the Son of Light, who's going to be the light of the world to us. And the prophecy says when that happens, there will be no night and we won't need the sun. And everybody is the curses, all the curses, the cursed universe is all going to be lifted. So this is the blessed hope that people are living for and believing on. But this is actually happening. I mean, we're watching this. These are the signs of the heavens that are supposed to happen before this final peace happens. And we have some things to go through before that happens, like sure. The end time war, the final battle, World War III, which I guess is kind of being set. The stage is being set now, but
scarily enough.
Yeah, especially, you know, what's been happening this past year. But it turns into a space war, like a real Star Wars. And this is why my whole Monica is the truth is stranger than fiction, because we've been given so much of this in science fiction, film and TV to help us prepare for these concepts that will eventually become reality. Just like the original Star Trek, you know, from the 1960s. And, you know, a lot of their technology that they showcased is now our reality.
Absolutely.
There's, you know, like hundreds of little gadgets and pieces of things that we have now. So, I mean, that wasn't done by accident. And the same thing with Star Wars, you know, the Tatooine, where they show the two suns, you know, that was also getting us ready for, and we're seeing two suns. I mean, not every day, but it has to do with, you know, the light, because Nemesis is a black star. It doesn't radiate. So when our sun hits it, it looks like it hits Venus or it hits any other planets. It shines and it looks like another star, but this looks like two suns. Okay. So, you know, that was, and they called that Naboo. So Naboo, Nibiru, sounds pretty similar.
Yeah.
So the truth is stranger than fiction. And we're getting these messages in the TV and the movie realm. I mean, even the big sci-fi hit series Resident Alien, it's just, I mean, you know, we call it soft disclosure, but some of it is just like full disclosure, you know, where lately, you know, it's like there's a race of aliens on Earth that is a threat to the planet. They want to take over the planet. They want to take over the world. And who are they? They're the Greys. And who was played by George Takei? Well, his voice is behind the Gray, which is, you know, makes it fun and entertaining. But at the same time, there's a lot of truth to that. So, again, that's another, you know, truth is stranger than fiction, soft disclosure piece. I mean, there's tons of stuff in Resident Alien about who the aliens are. I mean, he, you know, and you know that Harry Van Der Spiegel, he's the, you know, he's an amphibious alien. So, you know, the reptilians, the lizard men, the Anunnaki, the Greys are all his enemies.
Yeah.
So that's interesting that that's what's put into the script. And that's it all in my first book of, you know, who are the ETs and the aliens and, you know, how to, because it's basically a clash between two kingdoms on Earth. And this has been going on for millennia. This is nothing new.
Absolutely two schools of thought at the same time.
Yes. And that's, this is a controversy, it's an ongoing controversy, because you have, you know, you have the Christian fringe who take one story out of the Bible, which is about the fallen angels and in the Genesis 6, and they think, you know, that where they fell, one third of heaven's angels basically rebelled against the Creator, came to Earth, had sex with Earth women who were already on the Earth before they came.
Well, it's a sexy story.
Well, yeah, I guess so. But they created miscreants. They created monsters, the Nephilim, which in Hebrew means the fallen ones, the rejects. And, you know, they basically went against the laws of creation. So the Creator had to wipe them off the earth with another flood. And that was the second flood, the flood of Noah.
Yeah.
And then after that, when people got repopulated on the earth, it was a different DNA. Because if you read before that, everybody was living to be like 900 years old. And now we're lucky if we can live to 120. That's pretty much where the DNA goes. So it's a different type of human. And one thing that I'm, proving in my book series is that there was there's a gene war between the aliens over us. And I also, my fourth book, Covenants, is basically lancing the boils of racism and, pinning it on where did it all begin with the Anunnaki, who were, in competition with other groups of aliens over who was going to populate the earth, who was going to control the earth, and who was going to control the humans. And I find it interesting that the prophecies and the promises of God, the creator, the Messiah, is that when he returns, he restores all things. And that is also restoring our DNA back to our original blueprint, which was all 12 strands of DNA, which is, what I believe happened in the original Garden of Eden, where they walked with the Lord and they knew everything before the curse, before the fall. And when they talk about the fall of humankind, I believe that is like a downgrading of the DNA. So, people call it the glory body and superhuman and, operating, firing on all 12 cylinders, so to speak. But that's what's coming in the future when he comes back to restore this. And all that's happened in between has been, genetic warfare over different races and different groups, experiments of different types of humans to keep everyone divided, and it's really the creator's will for all of us to be united under one God, under one universe. And that's what's going to happen after all this gets sorted out, because that's what the prophecy says. So I just wanted to insert that in there for people who are listening, to give them hope that this is not, the be all and end all. We're not going to be stuck here forever. Yeah. And it is changing, and it's changing pretty rapidly right now. So it's exciting that it's changing. And, people have to be ready to, slough off the mortal coil whenever they get called to do so and get their souls right with the creator, because that's where you go back. And that's something that is a discernment about who we are versus who some of these aliens are. And I have that in my first book, where I kind of categorize them as either soul matrixed or not soul matrixed, because they're like the grays. They're not soul matrix. They're mainly, a lot of them are clones and, hybrids and cybergenetic robots and insectoids. And there's 35, according to the whistleblowers, there's 35 different types of grays. And like in my book, I spell it G-R-A-Y because that is grays, the species, as opposed to G-R-E-Y, gray, the color. Because the gray species can be, brown, white, dark, there's like a black metallic color. There's, obviously gray, chalky white, beige, tan. They come in all different colors. So, and they say that they're like, anybody can have a gray, it's like robots, and they program them and they clone them and they send them off to do their bidding. And who are they? Well, the reptilians and draconian kingdom is behind a lot of that. Okay. And not to say that the human ETs aren't using grays as well. They are, but anybody can really program a gray, just like you and I were working on computers and, people program stuff all the time. So, AI is definitely, nothing new. They've been controlling it. And again, this comes out in fiction. And like, if anybody watches Marvel and saw the Loki series last year, I mean, that was what was revealed in that's, you know, it was the artificial intelligence that was behind what he thought were the beings that were controlling things. They turned out to be these giant robots. And then they find out that it was the lizards that were behind them. Okay. So, is that as another truth is stranger than fiction? Because that's what I uncovered in my first book, is that the reptilians were behind the Greys, that they send the Greys to do their bidding, and they are operating from inside the earth. So this is when I think I had sent you this about the controversy, you know, between, you know, the Christian fringe that thinks that all aliens are demons.
Yeah.
All aliens are fallen angels. That's their mantra. And, you know, when we start off by saying all, you know, already
you've like, got a distillation mentality. So,
And it's another form of bigotry. Okay. So, you know, they started out with the Jews. You know, the Jews were considered aliens and they were all this and all that and all Christ killers and yada, yada, yada. And it went down through the ages. And in a way, all the persecution was there to prepare humanity for something else, because they considered them to be alien, okay? And maybe they are. Maybe they came from another star and they were planted here, and that's why they were so persecuted. I don't know. That's one hypothesis. But we can't broad brush everybody and say all is this and all is that. You have the New Agers, on the other hand, who a lot of them think, well, you know, if the aliens were a threat because they're against all the government stuff that they're putting out, that there's an alien threat. Well, if the government didn't think there was a threat, then why have they kept the secret space program so secret for 75 years, put all this black budget money, billions, trillions into it, if there wasn't a threat? Okay. Yeah. So let's discuss what a threat is, because they say that, oh, well, if the aliens were a threat, then they would have killed us off by now. But I tell them, and here's my short answer, is that there's worse things than death. Okay. On this planet, there are worse things. There are people that are in all kinds of enslavements, vampirism, all types of persecution, being used and abused for horrible, horrible things. Okay. And I'm not going to go down those holes and say, you know, use your imagination. This is our history. There are worse things than death. There are people that wish to die and they can't, to get out of these horrible sufferings. Okay. So just because a race of beings doesn't kill us off doesn't necessarily mean they're not a threat to human life. Okay. Yeah. We just had a huge disclosure dump in April of this year, where the Pentagon, the Defense Department, they 1500 pages were released on the neurological, biological effects of being in close proximity to alien technology or alien beings themselves, all the way from burns, to skin disorders and, neurological problems, to missing pregnancies.
Yeah.
Okay. So how is that not a threat? Okay. So, there's good ETs and not good. You know, there's the good and the evil, just like there is in all of us. You know, we have good humans and we have evil humans. There's the Christians have a piece of the story where, you know, they're demons, they're fallen angels. That is one piece of the story. But what they're not getting is the other part of the story. And the reason for it is because the Church of Rome deleted 75 of the Jewish texts, which have the other parts of the story. The books of Enoch, the books of Jasher, the books of Solomon, which basically tell us the story of this ancient cosmic drama that went on between these different groups of aliens. Okay. So if they were so evil, then how come God didn't destroy them all? Why didn't God let them, you know, why did God let them continue on? Why are they still with us? Okay. And these are questions I address in my book series because, and this is something I stumbled upon, which pretty much blew my mind. So I put it in my fourth book, Covenants, about the Vatican. Okay. So of all people, of all, you know, groups and places, you know, who would have thunk it that they want to lead the disclosure movement because they want to be the first point of contact when the aliens arrive? Because, you know, well, they fit right into the Bible, the Revelation Bible prophecy of the end times.
Sure.
And the Antichrist, where the, you know, Revelation talks about the city that sits on seven hills is the whore of Babylon. And I mean, Rome sits on seven hills and, you know, the Church of Rome basically got their ancient religion from Babylon. And, yep. And, you know, I show this in my slideshows how like their garb, the mitar, the hat, the incense, the, all this stuff went all the way back to Babylon. And when they, when Constantine came around and he saw that Christianity was spreading throughout the world and he wanted to control it and it was like, well, if you can't beat them, join them. And he thought, well, I'm not going to join them, but I'm going to bring them and incorporate them into our already existing empire and religion. And that's what he did. But he had to delete the Jews. He had put the Constantine's Creed was the church doctrine of anti-Semitism replacement theology. They deleted 75 books. They did not want people to know the truth about where our origins were. So everyone became like a people with amnesia. And now we're starting to get those pieces back. And it's coming full circle with the end time prophecy, because it says that the Antichrist is going to come through this false prophet who sits on seven hills, which, you know, obviously is the Vatican and one of the popes, whether it's this pope or the next pope, I don't know. But I find it really coincidental that the scripture, the prophecy in the book of Daniel talks about how the Antichrist changes signs, the seasons and the times of because they don't want people to figure out where we're at. So they want to control the timeline. Yeah. And that's exactly where we're at. Nobody knows what time it is, you know, whether it's 5783 or 2022 or Julian calendar, you know, 111 of something, you know. So they've been messing around with that. And these are the powers that be, the archons that are, you know, looking to keep everybody enslaved in this, you know, so-called matrix of things that we live in here. And there's only one that said, I have come to set the captives free. And that would be Yeshua. That would be the Messiah. And, you know, who are the captives? That's us. And free from what? This draconian system that everyone has become enslaved in one form or another. Okay. So, you know, the hope and the blessing is that all this is going to end and there's going to be a new world and heaven is coming to earth, which is going to like level all this stuff out. You know, the racism, yeah. The division, all of that. And the whole stuff with what's going on in the solar system. Yeah. And this is when I started getting into this, Christopher, and I was like, wow, that's why, because the system is a mess. Okay. And when you study it and you see, well, every time there's a pass from Nibiru, it's not always exactly the same because this planet is elongated and it's roguish. Okay. It's tilted and it's not like, well, it doesn't play well with all the others and it doesn't go around like all the other planets do on its own sun, which is Nemesis, but it intersects it with us. So it comes around our sun. And then, you know, goes back around and it's that's why it's called the destroyer by the Hebrews, because it creates cataclysms and it bumps into things. The pieces that that's in its tail, the moons, this is why we've had like collisions in our own solar system, which were evidence of previous passings of Nibiru. Now, Velikovsky wrote about worlds in collision. I mean, how we got the asteroid belt, which used to be a planet, and it's written in the Bible, yeah. Okay, that there was another planet. So it got broken up into pieces, and that's what, you know, sent the other planets, you know, Uranus got tilted, and, you know, one of the moons became like one of, like Pluto was supposed to be a moon of Saturn, got catapulted out into the outer edges of the solar system. And there's all these different stories, and they're in mythology as well. So we have to be able to connect those dots and say, well, this must be some truth to it. And why did it happen? Well, because we have this maverick, this rogue planet that just comes in and creates havoc every 3,600 years, creates all this stuff. So why that the Lord, who promises both in the Old, in the Jewish Bible, and in the book of Revelation, that he's going to recreate the heavens and the earth. Why is he going to recreate the heavens and the earth? Because the old way isn't working. There's a glitch. There's a flaw. It's messed up. So it needs to be renewed. All things are going to be new. The earth is going to be renewed. Even the solar system, the sun, our sun is dying. I mean, and that's why, you know, when a sun starts to die, it starts to belch out a lot of corrupt. I mean, this is one of the worst solar cycles we've been in a long time.
Yeah, yeah. And over the last decade, we've reclassified solar flares Lord knows how many times. It's gotten insane, and to the point that, yeah, that we have a crack in the magnetosphere that's been seen. We have numerous holes that occasionally pop up. So it's things. I'm not going to be doom and gloom. You know, things won't happen for a long, 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 long time. However, boy, howdy, is there a cycle going on in the solar system that is not going to change for a little while. So.
I agree. And I think that when Nibiru passes, everything's going to change here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so I would love to.
People need to be prepared for that.
Yes, most definitely. And I would love to have you on again and again to discuss the topic of Nibiru, to discuss the topic of, you know, the other signs and prophecies that come along with such things. I want to thank you so much.
I'm happy to. Thank you.
I want to thank you for your time tonight, especially in such a crunch fashion, coming out of a conference directly onto air with me. So thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you, Christopher, for inviting me.
You bet. Before we let you go, let everybody know where they can catch you at your next appearance. Where they can go to follow your RSS feed or your blog, your videos, where they can go to buy the books, of course, other than our bookstore.
Yes, thank you. I'm at whoshointhecosmiczoo.com for the books, and I will be in Phoenix for the International UFO Congress.
Cool.
October 12th through the 16th. I'll be speaking on the 16th on signs in the heavens and showing my slideshow presentation with some video on October 16th at 1 p.m. So they can go to the International UFO Congress, look that up and get all the info and buy tickets. And I'm also on Facebook. You can find me, Who's Who in the Cosmic Zoo on Facebook. I post a lot of the pictures and the videos of what's happening around the sun, both the ships and the planets, and yet by the grace of God, go we.
That's it. Well, thank you once again for your time tonight. I greatly appreciate it. I know the audience loves these topics, so we will have you on again and again, Ella. Please do hold the line real quick while we close things out to our commercial break before we welcome Mary Joyce. While you are online checking out all of the amazing work of our guest, Ella Labane, and Who's Who in the Cosmic Zoo. Make sure to stop on by Curious Realm. That is where you can go. That's where you can go and share your story. CuriousRealm.com/story. If you have an experience with the divine, if you have an experience with the paranormal or cryptids, if you are a targeted individual and would like to share your story or pose your story or experience or even evidence, pictures, video, audio, to our experts, people like Ella, for shows like this, feel free to fill out our form. You can be anonymous if you like. We will bring up your case and your experience to our researchers and authors. So, make sure to stay tuned. After these messages, folks, we will be bringing back our good friend Mary Joyce to discuss anomalies on Mars in Antarctica as well as the moon right after this. With the rise in attention to the health benefits of cannabis and cannabinoids, including CBD, True Hemp Science has become one of the premier providers of full-spectrum CBD and CBD-related products. Using a proprietary spigeric process, True Hemp Science extracts maximum benefit from the whole hemp plant. Buds, leaves, stems, seeds, even roots. Every part of the plant is used and then reused to formulate a rich, complex profile of CBD, CBD derivatives, and terpenes guaranteed to provide the relief and benefits you need daily. Visit TrueHempScience.com to experience the best CBD oils, edibles, and topicals on the market today. And use code CURIOUS7 to save 7% off your entire purchase of $50 or more and get 2 25-milligram CBD cookies or brownies free. That website again is TrueHempScience.com and the code is CURIOUS7. Curious Realm Podcast is your source for the latest and greatest news and events in the world of the paranormal, esoteric, and forbidden knowledge. And there's no better way to spark the conversation than with items from the Curious Realm store. Choose from fan favorites like hoodies, mouse pads, coffee mugs, and more. Buy books and items from your favorite Curious Realm guests. Get your hands on the latest gear for paranormal investigations and experiments we discuss on the show. Open your web browser and stop on by the Curious Realm store at CuriousRealm.com/store to buy the latest Curious Realm wear and out-of-this-world gifts for yourself, your family, or a mind that you want to open. That website again is CuriousRealm.com/store. Have you considered starting a podcast? Looking for a way to make your business a voice of authority in an industry? Then Podcast Cadet is the solution for you. Whether starting a podcast for yourself, your brand, business, school, church, or just plain fun, Podcast Cadet is here to help you navigate the waters of the podcast industry. Specializing in one-on-one consultation and training with industry professionals in fields ranging from podcast technology and editing to distribution, monetization, and even social media strategies, Podcast Cadet tailors their services to the specific needs of you and your podcast. Do you already have a podcast and trying to find ways to engage and grow your audience? Sign up for your Podcast Cadet audit today and let us help you explore new and exciting ways to leverage your content and elevate your podcast brand to whole new levels. From consultation workshops to affordable podcast production and maintenance packages, Podcast Cadet is your one-stop shop for everything podcast-related on the internet. Visit podcastcadet.com today to sign up for your consultation or training and use code CURIOUS20 to save 20% off your entire purchase. That website again is podcastcadet.com. Well, hello, everybody, and welcome back. Our guest in this segment is the amazing Miss Mary Joyce. She is an investigator for the awesome website SkyshipsOverCashiers.com. She has worked in news media. She has worked in investigations for years and has come on previously talking about not only the stories of Cherokee Little People, but also very popular episodes about deep underground military bases, things like that. Today, we will actively be having her on to discuss her new book that has just come out, Spy in the Sky. It is available on Amazon. You can hop out and grab that all over the place. Welcome back to the show, Mary Joyce. How have you been doing?
I'm doing fine. It's great to be back on the air with you.
Well, I'm glad to have you back on the air. We went to have you on an episode pre-record yesterday and had a little bit of a issue getting the images that you sent us. But the images from your new book are absolutely phenomenal. Here's an example of them. This is an image of UFOs skidding on Mars, according to the breakdown of it here. Now, let's get into real quick what it was that first brought you into researching these topics, Mary, because your research is very in depth and travels a far span of topics.
So we're not talking about the book. We're talking about how I've gotten into all of this stuff.
Yes, right? Exactly. Let's start there for those that may not have heard you on other shows, and then we will get into the new book, Spy in the Sky.
At one time, I lived on Cocoa Beach between Patrick Air Force Base and the Kennedy Space Center. And during that time, I saw a lot of activity in the sky. I got to meet people who worked at NASA, including one astronaut, and really began to learn a lot about UFOs. In fact, to the point where I was lecturing all over the state of Florida, just talking about the sightings over that state. So that kind of got me started. Then when I moved to North Carolina, I didn't know what I was walking into, but it's kind of a hotbed of very interesting topics. We have Bigfoot, we have Cherokee Little People, we have deep underground bases. It's just incredible. It just seems to go on and on and on. Also, giant skeletons have been found in this area. So it's opened up a whole lot of topics just moving to North Carolina.
Absolutely. And even out there, you've got all kinds of wildlife in the mountains, all sorts of things. So when you started researching the new book, Spy in the Sky, what was it that first sent you, I guess, down that rabbit hole of anomalies on the moon, anomalies on Earth, anomalies on the surface of Mars?
There is a wonderful tool that anybody can use. It's called Google Earth, especially the pro version, Google Earth Pro. And you can scan everything and get satellite imagery on Mars, on the moon, all around this planet. And anything that I have put in the book, I provide the coordinates so anybody can go find what I have put in the book. And I did this because there are so many people out there that get such a kick out of creating phony images. So if people can go and find them for themselves, then you know somebody hasn't been playing visual tricks on you. And by the way, this book is packed with imagery. There's photos on all but three pages of the book, and almost all of those photos are in color.
And the photos, once again, that you have provided us are absolutely fantastic. Highly detailed imagery that you have been able to provide for us here. Let's start getting into some of the anomalies that have been, that you have been able to find on Mars, and specifically this image that we have of the possible UFO skidding.
Okay. In the book, I have three images of UFOs, two of them crashing like this one, and one of them is actually parked on the planet. That one I'll start with, and it's a circular one. With Google Earth Pro, you can measure things. So it's a, let's see, it's at least 3.5 miles in diameter.
Oh, wow.
It has a raised center like some of the UFOs that have been caught on cameras here on Earth. And since it, you know, the sun hits Mars also, and there's a shadow, so you can tell it's something parked above the surface of the planet. So that's one of the images. The one that you have on the screen is one that's a skid. And that particular UFO is over, I think, over 400 feet in diameter. And that skid mark, you'll see a yellow line, a top skinny photo. Yep. That is a measuring device, and that's over 4,400 feet long. So we're talking a major skid. And
wow.
Then there's another one shows a smaller craft also crash landing on Mars. And, you know, they end up to the point where they just smash into the soil of Mars, and they come to a screeching halt.
And once again, these are things that anybody can go with Google Earth and find themselves.
The coordinates are in the book, so you can go and find them. There have been cases where I have found stuff and posted it on our website, skyshipsovercachers.com, and sometimes within a day they will disappear. So if anybody finds something really, really interesting using Google Earth, there is a key on your keyboard where you can print the screen. Save it, because sometimes if we discover stuff that the famous they don't want us to know about, they will quickly be blurred.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I am one of those folks that I will go take screenshots of things so that there is a date attached to it digitally, all kinds of stuff. Because, yeah, and that's honestly a lot of the reason why my Facebook group exists the way it does, is so that you can go and literally just search a topic and find news articles.
Right.
Because those things rifle off of search engines so fast now.
Well, one of the things that regarding Mars in particular, I think it's important for people to realize that there is evidence that there is active human activity on Mars right now. And so in the book, I include two what I would call habitats, which would be enclosed living quarters so that you can live in a hostile environment. I found one, it was quite a number of years ago, and I found it in the northern hemisphere of Mars, and it was 700 feet in length, which is pretty good size. 5 years later, I was scanning, I call it cruising with Google Earth. I was cruising the southern hemisphere, the southern polar region. I found a second habitat. This one was similar in construction, but this one was truly 10 times bigger than the first one. So I suspect it was built later, and it's measured out at 7,000 feet in length. That's one kind of evidence that we are active on the planet now. And one of the reasons that I think this is very valid is the man who was the head of Israeli space security for nearly 30 years Hyman Ashid, I believe is how his name is pronounced. And in December of 2020, he went public with some very interesting statements in the Jerusalem Post, which is a highly regarded newspaper. And let me just quote two lines from the statement that he posted in the Jerusalem Post. One of them is, there is an agreement between the U.S. government and the aliens. That was one. Another one, there's an underground base in the depths of Mars where their representatives are located and also our American astronauts. Another piece of evidence that I found when scrolling with Google Earth was I found 27 entrances, and you may have a picture of that. I think I sent you one. Mm-hmm. There were 27 entrances going into Mars. They were all in a line spread out over 16 miles. They're all cut out the same way, so they look like hangar entrances or warehouse entrances. Mm-hmm. At first, you might think you're just seeing the same one over and over again, but the dimensions will vary anywhere from, in round figures, 400 feet to 1,000 feet in width, and the details around the door, so to speak, will vary from one to the other. And I found that one by simply doing things a little bit differently. Normally, when we go to anybody, when you go to Earth or you go to Mars or the moon, you scroll from right to left or left to right. And I turned the coordinates around and started scanning from north to south. That's when I discovered this line of 27 entrances into Mars. And they are not ancient. They look like contemporary active entrances. If I hadn't done that, I wouldn't have realized that there were so many in a line. I had previously discovered some, but never with this extended view of them.
There has been a large community of people coming out over the last many years, Corey Good being one of them, claiming, of course, the secret Space Force, which has existed long and decades before the active Space Force that we have now. I mean, even to think, I laughed whenever people were like, oh, look at this new thing. I was like, no, like the X-37Bs flying over our head in 2012 and landed after a 2-year unmanned successful mission. We have had secret things in the skies above us for decades, at least as long as we've been in the air.
That's correct.
There, even here in Texas, there were the airship sightings of the late 1800s, things like that. So that was far before Kitty Hawk, or I mean, there were balloons, things like that. But nothing as massive as mile long ships in the sky. And
I get amused there. I believe it still continues. There is a conference that goes on in Washington, D.C. area every year, and it's about dealing with Mars as if everything they're talking about is in the future. As far as I'm concerned, everything they're talking about has already happened. And it's just why there's so much deception with what's going on is a puzzlement to me, and I'm sure to you too, but it is a reality.
Well, and, you know, granted, there are reasons for deep secrets within military, things like
correct.
That.
Correct.
And absolutely one of the things that we have held, throughout this entire recent, I would actively say, post movement of disclosure, because the movement happened long ago. Stanton Freeman, all those good folks who fought for a good 20 years for the disclosure movement. What we are seeing right now is what appears, at least to me, to be a fully planned dissemination of information. Much like after Roswell, things like that, where technology took a huge leap. From microwaves being the size of a building to, hey, here's one that can fit in your kitchen, folks, to what we have now. And the only way that the technology will be monetized or be able to be brought out for the next generation of technology to come out is to be foot forward and say where it's come from.
You're absolutely right. You're on target.
And even now, to see China going back to the moon, They have actively just discovered a new crystal on the moon that may be key for fusion energy. There are numerous anomalies on the moon, numerous anomalous things regarding the moon. Even the fact that seismographs on the moon recorded a ring like a bell or a gong.
That's happened at least twice that I'm aware of.
Absolutely. Because the first time they thought, maybe anomaly. Then it happened again. So, for all those out there, my great-grandmother, God rest her soul, Mary, was one of the many that would swear up and down, we never went there.
Oh, my goodness.
That was Hollywood. That never happened. Her whole life, like even when it happened, was like, nope, not real. However, like we have laser mirrors on the moon. We have seismographs on the moon. We have scientific instrumentation that's there. I have jokingly said for numerous years, Mary, that, oh no, we went to the moon. We were just heavily invited not to come back.
Right. And I have some confirmation of that in the book. I was able to go back and get a copy of the radio interview that Donna Hare gave to WOL radio in Washington, D.C. way back in the 1995. And she worked for the Space Center or worked for NASA, and she had some kind of secret clearance. She went public again in 1995 and talked about how NASA was deliberately airbrushing out images of things that were found on the moon. And so that interview is kind of interesting. And in the book, to make it easier for people, I've highlighted things that I think are really worth noting.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, NASA has, they have been airbrushing photos since they have been taking photos in space.
And because of that, it's very, very hard, even using Google Earth today, to find anything on the, especially the far side of the moon, that hasn't been tampered with in some way or another. And I was absolutely flabbergasted that when I was doing my scrolling of the moon, that I actually found a pyramid that is on the side of the moon that's facing Earth. After all the cover-ups, I couldn't believe that that was still available for anybody to look at. And it's no small thing. It looks like a white pyramid, and each side is like 328 feet in size. So that's another image that I have. It's one of the few black and white images, but it is a photographic image of that image or that pyramid.
Well, and there are numerous structures on the moon. There's the large smokestack that apparently puffed out air as our modules went past it on the moon. There are what appear to be glass tubes on the moon. All kinds of strange anomalies. Let's start getting into a couple of these other images that you sent. Okay. Specifically the images from Antarctica.
For clarification, those two things at the top are two of those entrances into Mars that I was talking about.
Yes.
And that's just one of 20. That's just two of 27. And in the book, they're a little bit sharper than that because I had to do copying and pasting to get these images to you. But if you look at the edge of each of those, the border around the entrances, you will see that the little notches are a little bit different with each one.
Yep.
So they're not identical, but they at first glance they seem to be. Well, now the rest of those entrances are in Antarctica.
Well, and of course there was the long held belief by Admiral Byrd, not even belief, account that he flew into Antarctica, that there was a hole that was wide. Big enough for him to easily fly his plane through, and go into another place.
I had that on our website, and it reads like a fairy tale.
Yeah.
But it's coming from a man who's not very likely to concoct a story like this. So you have to, you know, hold your breath and think, hey, he may be telling the absolute truth.
Well, and, you know, even to that note, there is quite literally, let me see if I can find it real quick, but there is an actual no-fly zone over Antarctica. There is a part of Antarctica that is a radio free no fly zone. Like it's a dark area.
That's correct.
And it's pretty wild. Even whenever you start looking at other anomalies that, have been found in the Antarctic region.
If you can go back to those two entrances into sure. Antarctica, I can give you some more information on that because, a great cover-up story goes with that one.
Well, let's talk about that real quick. Here we go.
Okay, the larger entrance, which is on the right, is 300 feet across at its max and 100 feet high at the peak. So any plane that we have could fly in there very easily.
Yes.
Now, I suspect this is still a very active entrance because no sooner had I put that on the Skyships Over Cashers website, I think it may have been within a day, it was like somebody poured black India ink all over it, so you no longer could see anything. But that wasn't the end of it. Right after that, I was still able to find the two entrances, and I have a photo where you can see where they are in position to each other. They're not right next door, like they appear to be here. And even though they blacked them out, there's still words that say Hollow Earth Entrance 1, Hollow Earth Entrance 2. But that didn't last very long either. That went totally black. And ultimately, they turned that whole area into a white ice field like there was nothing like that ever in existence. So when you look at the series of photos, you begin to see how cover-ups can be done, and you know, we no longer can see what's really there.
Yeah, and there have been numerous cases of images disappearing from Google Earth, things being there one day and then not being there the next. It's and this other image that you have on this page down at the bottom is pretty phenomenal and shows some incredible structure.
It's almost a year ago that we began to discover ancient cities emerging from the melting ice in Antarctica. And you can see the wall-like structures here.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very, very clear. But we posted a number of photos, or I have put a number of these in the book. And not only do you see the rectangular box shapes of walls, but then you can see also how the city has evolved, let's say, along a river or something, because the flow of the boxes is in a very organic fashion, like we see when, you know, we see cities developing today. Now, yeah. What makes this incredible? And again, we only found these a year ago. Most scientists say that continent's been covered in ice for 34 million years. So these are just now appearing from the ice, which would make them incredibly old if that continent's been covered for 34 million years.
Yeah.
To put this in perspective, the Great Pyramid is less than 5,000 years old. Compare 5,000 to 34 million. There's just no comparison. So this has got to be the oldest remnant on the planet.
Well, yeah. I mean, if all scheduled science as they have it is according to calendar date, absolutely. And, you know, that brings into question a whole number of things that we speak about regularly on the show, Mary, which is the almost religion of science and rigid unwillingness to change things like that. Even whenever you're talking about the quote unquote land bridge to America that brought people over to North America, that's funny because Native American stories go back further than that.
Correct.
You know, and even whenever you look at things, which, yes, I will admit, the Perry Reese map has never been fully confirmed. However, it shows a pretty accurate accounting of the actual continent of Antarctica and the coastline.
Right.
And that was, at least to all knowledge at that point, not an explored area of the world. It wasn't like, you know, hey, here's a map by Amerigo Vespucci that Columbus is going to use, you know. That wasn't the case with Antarctica at the time. Yet still, there is a perfectly accurate representation of the coastline, sans ice. There are numerous accounts from other ancient cultures about another continent, not even Atlantis, but about there being another continent.
Right.
So to see structure like this, and granted, this is, yes, a zoomed in image. However, the angular markings of this, specifically the filter being used to process this image, for that to pop out, would mean that it would have to be raised.
Right.
I mean, even if you're using Photoshop or something like that, that is a quote find edge function.
Right.
Where it's like, okay, find the raised parts and highlight them.
Right. But what I did with this particular photo is that I just turned up the contrast.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That, you know, you could see it instantly. You can still see it when I don't do that.
Yeah.
But I wanted people to be able to easily see what I was talking about.
Well, and that's just it. And that's why I'm decoding for folks a couple different processes that you could use to get the image like that. And like you said, all you did was alter the contrast.
That's
and
correct.
those hard lines pop out immediately. And that's how you can tell that, like, it's not altered. It is an actual physical thing that's there. So these are some incredible images that you have provided, especially those of the Mars entrance there. Now, granted, there was the whole kerfuffle recently, and that's probably fresh in a lot of people's minds, especially our listeners, about the quote entrance that was found on Mars that actually just ended up being a geologic feature. However, this is quite different.
Yes,
I
absolutely. Especially when you find 27 of them.
Yeah. Yeah. And the fact that once again, it's not a shadow being cast or anything like that. These are hard lines. That is lack of light on the inside of something. So pretty incredible. What other evidence have you found on Mars?
Let me think here. I'm going to go blank on you here. The habitats, I think, are significant. I found one of my explorations just before I finished the book was to explore areas of Mars where scientists believe that there's water or ice beneath the surface.
Mm-hmm.
So I started searching in that area. So the very last, it's not at the end of the book, but at the very last thing on Mars, I found a deliberate cover up in an area where the water is found. And in one of the photos, it shows like train tracks that are parallel to each other. And then there's two areas where it's like somebody took a stiff brush, dipped it in kind of a reddish kind of paint, and just did swatch marks over two places in this region where water is supposed to be. And it's just not natural. I mean, it's almost like a stupid cover up. It looks so blatant. And so I have pictures of both of those sites where it's been blurred up. And the reason I started looking for that information is there is an organization that's known as SWIM, as like you swim in the water. It stands for Subsurface Water Ice Mapping on Mars. So I started with their research and then ended up finding this by just doing searches over and over and over again. You don't instantly find these things. I mean, the things that are in this book, I have really collected over years, and still it's brand new.
Yeah. And I mean, just to show you how new it is, folks, I mean, December 16, 2021, I've got the article from New Scientist right now. Large deposits of water found on Mars below the surface at the equator. We had found surface frost. We had found ice, mainly made of carbon dioxide, things like that. We had seen frost form. A big moment was when they saw frost form on the actual rover overnight. That showed the fact that there was at least evaporation in the atmosphere.
That I didn't know. That's real interesting.
Yeah. That was one of the first big, like, there is water on Mars, because you're not going to get frost forming on something
without it,
without evaporation in the air. So it was like, ooh, this is a big moment. Like, we just saw it form on the actual rover. And then it was shortly after that we started seeing things where water was found deposited at the poles. And then once again, and this is all within the last few years, the announcements of water. And then once again, large deposits, like they're talking about like underground lake size deposits, like tappable aquifer deposits.
I may not have made my logic logical for you, but the reason I started exploring that area is because humankind needs water to exist.
Yeah.
So I figure if there's going to be evidence of us being there, it's going to be where water is most likely to be found. So my assumption on the pictures that were covered up or brushed out with red paint is that that is a facility of some kind that's being inhabited by most likely us or aliens, one or the other.
Yeah. Well, and even the fact that in 2020, I've got the NASA.gov site up right now from the Inside NARD articles talking about water discovery on the moon inside and out. That is molecules of H2O embedded and perhaps sticking to the surface of grains and lunar dust. Like we have actually now actively found water on the moon as well.
Right.
So, and even the announcement in the last week and a half that we have found the first exoplanet that is half rock, half water.
Mm.
So the existence of water is, like you just said, it is key for life as we know it.
Right.
Like there's other life, things like that, but life as we know it requires water.
I found two sites around one of the polar regions right now. I can't remember which one it was, but one was ancient and one is contemporary. They're about 80 miles apart. So both in the past and in the present, they have been built near a water source.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, even identifying potential landing sites, things like that for the Mars rovers, those were things that they were looking for, right there, looking for places on Mars with signs of past water. Like those were absolutely key landing spots for them to go and explore.
Mm-hmm.
Because of, and even now they just made an announcement here in the last day or so. I remember posting the article of, new biomaterial, new actual evidence of life having been on Mars.
Mm-hmm.
So, what do you think the odds are that we have a sustained colony out? Even if it's the fact that we are out resource gathering, you know, what do you think the odds are that we have a sustained presence on either the moon or Mars, Mary?
I believe we do.
Wow. And have you?
And actually, I believe that it's more likely to be on Mars than on the moon. But as far as Mars is concerned, I've done enough researching on that. I would do a heavy bet that, we're there.
Wow. And, you know, once again, there have been quite a few people that have come out from the, quote, like super soldier programs, things like that, where they have actually said that they have been part of a Mars mission, that they have actively been part of the occupying force that is
there. The sad thing about that is the only thing we have, if we cover stories like that, is like one person's account. And that isn't enough, you know, to really totally be convincing. But it also is enough for us not to easily dismiss it.
Sure, sure. Absolutely. Especially if you can vet that individual, if you can vet their past, things like that. And there have been a couple folks that have withstood a good bit of vetting that have come forward with that. And I always find the topic interesting. I find nothing. My wife is one of those, Mary, that's like, I don't think that people have it in them to cooperate to that extent. she is a disbeliever in that way. She doesn't believe that it's possible for people to put forth something like that and just keep it secret. I am of the camp of, you know, there were people building singular parts all day long at a GE facility in Alabama that were like, well, this is what I do. And they had no idea that they were building detonators for atomic bombs. And that's all that they did was pump that one part out all day long, every day for a decade. So yeah, like there are definitely compartmentalized programs. There are definitely, as we've said before, with the deep underground military bases, a swath of evidence for such things, as well as budgets and technology. And the reason I bring that up is because one of the other pictures that you sent, and we have had Merrill Fankhauser on, a musician who has done quite a bit of work out in the Catalina area of California, talking about anomalies that are underneath the water there. And you sent a fantastic picture of what appears to be an underground runway under the water near Baja California. And if you zoom in on this picture, folks, you can see the absolutely amazing structure that is down there, the full curves, everything that, once again, look strikingly like a runway for an airport. But regardless of that, definitely do not look like a natural feature.
No. And I got the picture of the Spokane airport runways, which you have too, which you can compare, and you can almost instantly see the similarity.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, once again, there were plans way, way back in the 60s, folks, for underground military bases, underwater military bases. There exist numerous, like, literal books full of artist rendering illustrations, things like that. There is a full-on underwater base right over off the coast of Florida.
Now, my take on this, and I have quite a number of under the sea imagery that's included in this book. My working theory right now that these are ancient remnants. I think this is a civilization that once was above water. And I do not think that these are necessarily space related. Yeah. At the same time, I know that there's a lot of UFO activity along that whole California coast, especially around Catalina. Both things can be true and not be the same thing.
Well, and they don't have to be mutually exclusive to exist either. I mean, you know, we remind the audience regularly on this show, Mary, that the term UFO does not mean extraterrestrial. It just means unidentified, and that it flies through the air, and that it is. That's literally the definition. So could it be the fact that the civilization that was there is still there? Their technology would be pretty advanced to have survived the previous melting of ice caps to make the ocean that we have that now covers them, you know. So to imagine the fact that they may have craft or something like that would not be unimaginable if they were able to build that and even survive it, possibly.
Yeah. But the reason I really, really think that this airport is ancient is because you don't need a landing strip if you're going to land in water.
Yeah.
So that, to me, says this is ancient. And I have found what I think are ancient remnants of maybe even the old continent of Mu or Pan or Lemuria. Mm. It's three names for the same place.
Yep.
But I have found evidence, photographic evidence, from Alaska all the way down to Baja. And so that whole coastline, there's just all sorts of remnants, and we continue to find them. So it's quite an active place to search.
Oh, absolutely. And once again, there have been some amazing anomalies that have popped up Alaska-wise, Antarctica-wise, things like that. And there have been more than one situation and disclosure of things being found off California, specifically in the Baja and Catalina regions.
Now, it's a little harder to find things off the Atlantic. And here I will give you a personal story. Back in the days when I lived in Cocoa Beach, I was at the pier with a friend, and we were having drinks at the bar at, or the pier, and got into a conversation with a young couple who were still rather excited because they had been diving off of Vero Beach, and they had discovered the point of the pyramid coming up from the sandy bottom of the Atlantic Ocean. Well, that got my curiosity. It was the first time I had ever heard of that possibility. And eventually, at a much later time, I started using Google Earth and searching and searching and searching, and finally found two pyramids south of Paradise Island, which is, you know, one of the popular islands that people go to. And I have pictures in the book of the two pyramids that I discovered that way. Again, this is also a cover-up story, because shortly after I posted that on the website, which is where things seem to happen first, a new photographic strip had been put in there, and it was specifically over where these were, so you could no longer see them. So it's just real interesting.
Well, and, you know, there have been numerous sites like that discovered. I mean, parts of the Library of Alexandria have been rediscovered in such a way. There's even the gentleman right here. I've been trying to track him down to have him on the show, but there is a gentleman right over in Louisiana that spent years and years out on oil rigs, things like that, and claims to have actual sonar evidence of an entire almost sunken temple just off the coast of Texas and Louisiana.
Wow.
Yeah.
I have to get him on.
Yeah.
And make him bring his photos too, okay?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I'm trying to remember the show that I saw him on, and I was like, whoa, where did it? Because it was like a news story.
Wow.
That I saw that somebody shared with me. And it was like, wow, that's crazy.
That's interesting.
Because it was, and he apparently tells very few people about it, takes very few people out there. But yeah, here we go. Where is it? But yeah, we have had all kinds of things like that pop up around America.
You might find this interesting. The Atlantic bottom is very sandy compared to the Pacific. And whenever big storms come in, the treasure hunters will go out there looking for things that have been exposed because of the turbulent, let's say, a hurricane.
Yeah.
And one of those explorers was one who worked with Mel Fisher with the Atosha find in off of Key West.
Yep.
And he would fly in his small plane over the coast of East Coast of the United States after these storms. And he had seen the pyramid that would sometimes show up when the sands were, you know, like, let's say, flushed away. But then the sands will cover them back up again. So it's like they appear and disappear. So if you want to be a treasure hunter in Florida, you need to get out there after the next hurricane, which is headed there right now.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And there's the article that my buddy had sent me. Amateur archaeologists may have found an ancient city off the coast of St. Bernard. And there's the gentleman right there.
Wow, you must be real serious.
Yeah, and I mean, like, he's got some pretty interesting sonar soundings and things like that, showing right angles and all kinds of stuff. So the question, I guess, Mary, is what do we do with these things? These anomalies that we've found, the ones that you have found on Mars, the ones that you have found in the Antarctic and on the moon, what do we do now that we are armed with this information?
First of all, the more you know, the better off you are, because then you can find out if you're being hoodwinked or not, winked or not. That's one thing. The more people know, the more pressure can be put on, let's say, our government to provide more information, because our government only provides information when they're cornered, you know, and have to say something. Yeah. So, you know, this year they've been showing us radar images of Tic Tac UFOs through radar images from jet aircraft.
Yeah.
Big deal. That is such a baby step in Revelations.
Well, and once again, I am utterly happy for the discussion that it has opened on the floor of Congress, because apparently a lot of people who are, quote, read on the topic and in charge of such committees and the financing for such committees were like, hey, how come we haven't heard about this?
Right.
If this is going on, how come it isn't in our briefings? And even if you, those are moments that I actively go and I screen capture the whole thing and save the, like, I've got the entire 5 hour long.
Wow.
I go and record the whole thing, like, just in case they disappear.
Which from my experience is a smart thing to do.
Yeah. Yeah, even the panel on the origin of the COVID virus, like, most people didn't know that panel happened. There were five people from the intelligence community testifying to that, to five members of Congress in an empty press room. Remarkable. And most people do not know that these hearings happened. This one with the UFO UAPs happened to hit quite a bit of national news. They made quite a bit of noise about it, which you have to ask yourself about. While it was great that quite a few of the questions that were posed were literally culled from MUFON data and questions, at the same token, there were two or three times, one of which they actively asked, what about objects going into the water? What about these accounts of UFOs becoming, quote, USOs and becoming underwater submerged objects? To wit, they literally responded, we'll discuss that after this in our closed door session. So when it came to things coming in and out of the water, because those were there with the Nimitz encounters as well.
Right.
You know, and with the stories told by the sailors and all that kind of stuff. And hey, those stories even date back to, like, Cuba and Christopher Columbus. Like, Christopher Columbus even recorded lights going in and out of the water.
Now, you know that I believe in UFOs, but I want to tell you a little bit about Christopher Columbus. I was on San Salvador Island, which is the island that they believe Columbus first landed on. I was there at the time in October at the same time that he landed there. And I had studied his log before I made that trip. He talked about little lights flickering up in the evening, and he described them in such and such a way. I was around a campfire at that point, and the natives or the people who live on the island to this day will keep throwing logs on the fire to keep the mosquitoes away. And every time they do, these little lights, you know, flare up into the sky. I do not find that conclusive that he saw UFOs.
Okay.
Because I saw that phenomena for myself at the same time of year, and I think that's what he saw.
I could see that definitely being something then. And you know, the fact that we have explored, once again, the option of bases underwater, the fact that we have quite an extensive research base underwater off the coast of Florida, I don't find it strange that there are things underwater. It would make perfect sense to me, especially the every single culture around the world just saying that there was a flood at the same time. So we definitely have some stuff that has landed underwater, but some of these things are so intricate. It really does beg the question, you know, are we using the same technology that we use to burrow underground and build tunnels and infrastructure to do the same thing underwater? So I think the possibility is there. Whether or not it's a fact, I don't know. What is a fact is the strange anomalies. And this is, the image of this is just one of them. Once again,
I should add something to this. The longest airport in the world is, I think, a little over 3 miles. Hmm. This one's at least 80. I think it's 89 miles long.
Wow. Wow. That is incredible.
That's huge.
That is, and that's regardless, just construction on a massive scale, period.
Right.
And
everything I've seen along the coast of the Pacific seems to indicate that there may at one time have been not only a very unique civilization there, but it may have been a civilization of very large beings.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, specifically there in the West, Uintah Basin, Utah, Western California, all that, the Native Americans actively talk about the large red-headed giants.
Right.
You know, the Paiutes talked about them regularly. So it's interesting how these anomalies that have popped up on Mars, the moon, here on Earth, may very well be remnants of ancient civilization. And we have to, as individuals, be willing to push the timeline of knowledge, and push the time, and also destroy our assumptions of what ancient people were capable of. We recently had Stephen Myers on, and love having Stephen Myers on, mainly because he approaches the construction of the pyramids with a very logical point of view. You know, yeah, some extreme technology going on, but does it have to be alien based or aliens? No. Like, they were really, really good with water. Have you considered the fact that they just flooded the plain and dropped the bricks into place instead of taking them off a raft and pushing them across the dirt? So yeah, things like that. If you start considering the engineering techniques that ancient civilizations and cultures had, frequently, we haven't even caught up. We still haven't fully decoded the chemical mixture of Roman concrete.
The very ancient civilizations seem to have been more advanced than we are.
Absolutely.
We've come even close to catching up.
Yeah. Yeah, precisely. I mean, when you go back and look at things like Machu Picchu, stuff like that, just what it takes to construct something like that in such a place, phenomenal. Does it have to be alien in origin? No. But is the technology alien in the same way that these are truly UFOs, unidentified flying objects? Yes, it's alien because we don't know it.
You're right.
And by true definition and usage of the word, yes, it's alien. It is something foreign to us that probably even when posed with it, we're going to be stupefied by.
Gotcha.
That's, I mean, just to think about the fact that anybody that was building at the time that the structure off the coast of the Baja Peninsula would have been made, even if that is a geoglyph, even if that is something like a Nazca line that has been taken over by water, 89 miles, and able to make straight lines for 89 miles. That's some incredible technology, you know. Even we have deviations in our equipment that don't make perfect lines over 89 miles. So,
gotcha.
Yeah. I want to thank you for coming on, as always.
Wait a second, before you disappear, sure. Pull up the last pictures that I sent you.
Okay. Which ones are those?
The UFOs around the sun.
Oh, yeah. That's right. I forgot about that one, the Phoenix.
Yeah, that's really a big deal. There was a man who contacted me in 2013 from the Netherlands, and he was taking NASA photos of objects around the sun, and then he would clear up the debris and the interference and zoom way in and began to get really detailed information. And he was in touch with me from 2013 to 2015, and you can see by these two images how detailed and how metallic these things are. Now, they're giant. Everything that we have found around the sun that I posted in the book is bigger than Jupiter, which is our biggest planet. And both of these things that I sent to you are bigger than Jupiter. The man, his name is Matt Patmos. He and I named this the Flying Phoenix Hotel because the more you zoom in on it, the more it looks like it's a flying ship or a condo type thing cruising the neighborhood of our sun.
Wow.
And there was another one that also looked like a winged feet creature, and we call that one the Flying Phoenix. This one right here that you're now looking at was like a giant extension rod going way, way, way out in space from the sun. And yet when you zero in, you had the detail like you would have if you zeroed in on a saxophone. It's metallic and it's
interesting,
just incredible detail. And so we have a number of those things, and I include the original NASA photos. By the way, anybody can access NASA photos.
Yep.
Just by looking up SOHO. And SOHO is a satellite that constantly monitors the sun, and I think sends a picture out like every 15 minutes. And sometimes when you look at that, you get lucky and you find something.
Well, and there have been numerous anomalies spotted around the sun over the last few years. There was, of course, the image that went viral of the supposed sphere like taking plasma from the sun.
Yeah, it looked like a round ball with an umbilical cord connected to the sun.
Yeah.
And it's there. I no longer can remember. It seems like it was some 70 something days, maybe. It was attached to the sun for some time.
Yeah. Yeah. It was like umbilically attached. It was really weird. And the other image that you sent along with that was one from a NASA mission, from the Gemini 5 missions. Now, explain this one, because
I can't explain it. There were two astronauts on board that space mission, Gemini 5, which goes back to the 60s. And they got a photo of this. I cannot explain it. I call it an electrified donut.
Yeah.
But, it's just plain odd. There was another one that the same Gemini crew took a photo of. And again, I have, a picture of that in the book. And it looks like the wiring or the filament inside an old-time incandescent light bulb. Why would something like that be floating in free space? I don't know. But again, this book is a photo book. And it's a great book for people who really want to know stuff but don't have the time or the inclination to want to wade through a lot of words. And like I said earlier, there are photos on every page except for three. So it is photo book. And it's photographic evidence of secrets and cover-ups on Mars, the moon, here on Earth, out in deep space and around the sun. And I think people will find it very interesting.
Absolutely. Since I found out about the book, because I've got your whole collection, as I do with most of my guests, I ordered this for my collection as well.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Cannot wait to get it. I absolutely love it whenever guests have photos in their book. And like you said, the fact that the whole book is photos like what we have been looking at this whole time. So,
and I do the same thing on the website, which is skyshipsovercashiers.com.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And there's photos with, I think there's photos just about every story that we do.
Yeah.
And the best stories are in the section called Global Links, because those are the ones where you have the photos from, deep space.
Yeah. Yeah. And I actively follow Skyship Over Cashiers. I love the updates that you send out with stuff. You are always putting out some fantastic. Here's one of those talking about the large tubes.
We just posted this one, and it's created quite a conversation on our Facebook page. These are tubes. What are these tubes? And, you know, some people, who knows? Go back to that. Go back.
Yeah.
Right there. Well, back up again. I want you to see the inside of that light bulb. Up again.
Oh.
Right there. Whoa. See that picture on the right? What does that look like to you? And why would something like that be floating out in space?
Yeah. That is interesting, because the first thing that I thought of was plasmic discharge, aurora, something along those lines. But even then, you would need particle for it to come off of. And even if it's the fact of, is it what's in the center that the outside is reacting to, much like that would be. So absolutely phenomenal stuff. And once again, you always put out some great material, Mary. I love it whenever you come on.
You're very kind and very gracious, and I appreciate it. And just don't forget that you are part of the greater team that's trying to create true disclosure, because it's not going to happen from the top down.
No, it isn't. It will happen on a grassroots level. It's the only way it will happen. And once again, not to discredit anybody, not to take any thunder away from people like Lou Elizondo, stuff like that, who are out there and doing things. But there's still a lot that's under wraps. There's still a lot that read onto people are not willing or wanting to talk about. And that to me would speak more military than extraterrestrial. It would speak to me as more of black technology and technology that is still being tested and red team, blue teamed, which it just seems to be the case with a lot of this. The important thing is that the discussion has started. That since, when was that? December 17th, 2017, when Lou Elizondo first brought forth A-Tip and the Nimitz videos to CNN. Since then, the conversation has changed. The conversation around bars on the topic has changed. The conversation around dinner tables on the topic has changed, mainly because the topic's now a topic.
Gotcha.
It didn't used to be a topic. You know, it was one of those that got brushed off and dismissed pretty quick. Now a lot of people are willing to have a conversation. And when Pew polls come out, things like that, typically it's in the greater 80% of people that believe there is something else.
Yes.
So
keep up the good work.
Absolutely. You too. Once again, let everybody know before we let you go, where they can go to follow you socially, where they can go to subscribe to Skyships Over Cashers, YouTube, all that kind of good stuff, Mary.
If you go, I don't know if you can go back to the homepage.
Oh, I'm there.
No, hit home. You're on Global.
Oh, sorry. You're correct.
Okay, right there under Editor's Corner, there's contact information that you can get from there. There's also there's a lot of things in there if you want to find out about the books. There's quick summaries of each one of them. The area that's getting the most attention right now is the one that says Global Links. Many of the stories that ended up being in the book originally started in that section of the website. And we just keep doing research, and that's a hot one to go to usually.
Well, absolutely.
Anyhow, that's how you can contact us. It's skyshipsovercashers.com. We do have a Facebook page. I tend to do shorter things because people on Facebook have a very short attention span. And but you can type in the same thing, skyshipsovercashers.com, and do it on the Facebook page, and you'll get to the that particular place.
Fantastic. Well, once again, Mary, thank you so much for your time in this pre-record. I love talking with you. I love the evidence that you bring forth all the time. Keep sending pictures.
Not
please,
right.
Please, please. I know we had a bit of an issue, but man, the pictures that you used to send and that we would have conversations about were absolutely fantastic. So I look forward to many, many more and to having you on again and again in the future.
You're very kind. You have a good rest of the day.
Absolutely. Take care. And we are going to close out the show with the audience real quick. While you are online checking out all of the amazing work of Mary Joyce over at skyshipsovercashiers.com, folks, make sure to stop on by Curious Realm. Curious Realm is where you can find all of the episodes. That is where you can find our knowledge vault, full of amazing scientific documents, studies, declassified government programs, and PDFs. That's also where you can go and click our Share Your Story link. Whenever you click that, it will take you to a page where you can share your evidence, pictures, videos, audio, where you can share your account of the paranormal, Bigfoot. If you're a targeted individual, you can leave it anonymous if you like. You can use your name if you like. But this is material that we will be presenting to our experts on shows about topics about the same. So if you would like your story heard, if you would like your experience examined by professionals in the field, feel free to stop on by curiousrealm.com/story. Until next time, everybody, take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and remember, stay curious. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye. Thank you for tuning into this episode of The Curious Realm. Stay tuned for more guests, forbidden topics, and hidden truths. Download the official Curious Realm app and view the knowledge vault on our website, CuriousRealm.com. Follow us on social media by searching Curious Realm. Curious Realm is available on your favorite podcast services, as well as YouTube, Roku, Amazon Fire, and Apple TV through the APR TV app, available on all app markets. Curious Realm is a proud member of the HC Universal Network family of podcasts. For more great content or to become a sponsor of Curious Realm or other podcasts, visit hcuniversalnetwork.com today. Thanks for listening. Stay curious. And remember, the other side is always watching.